329 after all these failed attempts, the dossier says. The Germans came up with the idea of doing something fundamentally different. After the Germans realized that they could not just go behind the backs of the Allies could get to work, they appointed, name illegible, from the Conservative Party that is probably CDU/CSU, to think about it. This man compiled a collection of all technical possibilities, including some that seemed silly. He focused on one such matter from the time of the Second World War, which then led to the UFO craft. After the end of the war, there had been a development by a Professor Hyman Göttingen, West Germany, which had been kept secret from the beginning. It was about a technology for gravitational shielding. With this technology, in combination with residual information from the similar secret weapon development from the period between 1934 and 1945 in Germany, the FU project, probably standing for Flying Saucer, began. For this purpose, a secret test site was provided in the Lüneburg Heath. And a round device with a diameter of 18 meters was built, with a pilot's cupola on top. The device had three drives. 1. The gravitational shield. 2. A recoil engine that worked via a large number of small nozzles, probably 44, arranged all around. And, 3. A small propeller that worked upwards and could be retracted. The gravitational shield caused the device to be put into a state of almost floating. This made it practically weightless, similar to a balloon. In order to be able to rise, however, the propeller was needed. When the FU had then risen to a relatively high altitude, around 8,000 meters, the nozzles could come into operation. These then provided both forward propulsion and control. The FU device needed several hours to climb to a height suitable for its capabilities. It might have been quicker if it had had a large rotor instead of the small propeller. But then it would have been too loud to start secretly. The FU had a dark night camouflage paint job and was only ever launched at night so that it would not be noticed. The gravity shield apparently made it invisible to radar. It was only an experimental device, but a dangerous thing nonetheless. Because when it reached an altitude of 8,000 meters or more, it could fly frighteningly fast. When it flew at high altitudes, over 12,000 meters, it reached speeds of more than 6,500 kilometers per hour. The FU device was therefore a serious matter. In November 1976, it was definitely identified. But the Germans destroyed it completely before we could take it over. They claimed that it had burned up in a crash landing. The West German government distanced itself from the matter. This was not credible, but could not be refuted. Valuable information about the FU could not be found. All the key technicians who had worked on it also remained untraceable. This led to resentment. The Germans had tried for the first time since 1945 to acquire their own means of power again. However, it could not be proven that they had done so. The traces of the whole affair had been so completely removed that the Western governments soon tended to believe the government in Bonn, but not us, that is the British Secret Service. There is much to suggest that the CIA collaborated with the Germans. 331 gravity technology certainly represents a sensational possibility with far-reaching consequences. At first it seemed conceivable that the Americans wanted to share it with the Germans alone. In the meantime, status 1991, however, it looks as if the Germans could have reserved it for themselves, possibly together with disloyal circles within the American Secret Service CIA that were inclined towards fascist ideas. After the FU project was exposed in 1976, the Germans remained silent on the matter for a long time. They had learned their lessons from 1918 and 1945 to such an extent that they did not attempt anything else for a while, or so it seemed. In fact, however, work had continued in the same direction by 1982 at the latest and 1979 at the earliest. This time, presumably, without the direct involvement of the government in Bonn, but by private companies. It was established that a consortium of 11 companies had been formed under the code name Troa. 9 West German, One Austrian and one Italian company were involved. This time, there were also test sites in Egypt and even in Taiwan. The latter again suggests that autonomous circles of the CIA may have been involved. The new aircraft that was developed and built this time was much more advanced. We will call it FU-2 for now, although it certainly had a different name. The FU-2 was much more reminiscent of the designs known from the Nazi era than the FU-1. Faye. It was again disc-shaped and of about the same diameter, but higher, more like a very blunt cone. It again had the intended gravitational shield. Instead of a small propeller on top, it had a large, broad-winged rotor that lay above the cone body and rose to a horizontal position when in operation. This enabled FU-2 to reach its ideal flight altitude much more quickly. Instead of many small nozzles, FU-2 had only two, pivoting on the underside. 332 While the full device could still be viewed as a purely experimental device, FU-2 was already a proper aircraft for practical use. It was also already armed, probably with two Oerlikon cannons like those used in the German Gepard tank. In the ascent phase and at low altitudes it was certainly easily vulnerable. It could certainly be shot down easily with a machine gun, but probably not with guided missiles. At high altitudes, however, we are dealing with an aircraft that is almost unassailable. The speed of the FU-2 was frightening. In 1988, when there was probably only one example, it was possible to calculate, based on the knowledge of the takeoff time in Taiwan and the spy landing in Egypt, that the FU-2 reached an average flight speed of 13,200 km per hour on this route. This made it clear that the FU-2 could certainly also fly into Earth orbit, that is into space. It was therefore able to destroy our communications satellites at will. The following is an anonymous list of unexplained losses of spy satellites since 1988. Despite this recognized threat, the CIA was not cooperative in this matter. The Israeli secret service Mossad also initially did not want to help. The Israeli authorities told us that they considered the Federal Republic of Germany a friendly country. It was only through the intervention of appropriate circles in West Germany that cooperation was finally achieved. The Egyptian base of the Troika Consortium was spied on. The Germans reacted so quickly that the impression rose that they had been warned by the Americans, perhaps also by the Israelis. They quickly relocated all their facilities to Iran. From the Troika Consortium then moved to a new test site northwest of Baghdad in Iraq. 333 The first FU-2 device was probably lost during an orbital test. It either floated out into space without being rescued, or burned up on re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. The reports of the loss of the device can be considered reliable in any case. However, by this time two more FU-2s had already been completed and a third, making a total of four, was under construction. At the beginning of 1989 one of the brand new FU-2s was seen in West Germany. The speed performance has probably been increased even further in the meantime. At least theoretically the Germans now have the possibility of flying to the moon in a few hours and to Mars in a few days if they wanted to. The evidence for the existence of the new German weapons, or weapon carriers, appears almost incontrovertible. It is highly likely that at least one of the FU-2 aircraft has been permanently based in, place name obscured, in the territory of the former GDR since the end of 1990. Why are the Allies not doing anything about it? The FU-2s are still harmless. As long as they are climbing, they can certainly be intercepted easily. They only reach the incredible high speeds at great altitudes. This is because the anti-gravity effect then takes full effect. The FU-2 aircraft then has almost no weight and almost no air resistance to overcome. It gets faster the higher it flies. And in space it must be able to achieve unheard of feats once the devices have been designed for it. So this is a technology of the utmost importance, even if it is perhaps still difficult at the moment. Could it be that the Americans have secretly come to an agreement with the Germans? 334 If, for example, the USA were to build a kind of space base from which the German Fuchs could operate without having to go into the dangerous regions near the Earth, that would be a logical matter. Such behavior by the USA against its traditional allies is difficult to imagine, but it seems even more difficult to imagine that the Federal Republic of Germany alone, or perhaps even a few German companies alone, could have got so far with things. A list of UFO sightings in the relevant period follows. It is quite uncertain how far the Germans have actually got with their UFO crafts. Officially, they claim that their test objects have crashed, that the whole thing was a mistake, that it was not, TS is no longer available. But that is not credible. Reports of direct observations. 1. 1976 observation of the FU-1 device in northern Germany. Supposedly a British agent report, translated literally. The observation concerns an area of the German Bundes. I had to wait until dusk to be able to get to around 250 meters without being seen. But I managed to take some good telephoto photographs. The FU device is approximately 18 meters in diameter and has a dark night camouflage paint job. But on one of the cabin walls there is the usual symbol of the German Air Force, albeit small. Also the inscription. DFU HL. There are three very large round windows in the cabin. A stubby piece protrudes from the bottom, which turns out to be the air intake opening for a jet engine. 335 The entire UFO craft stands on a frame, a metal structure that is firmly attached to the device and may not be retractable. There are several vehicles on the ground, including two German army trucks. The operating personnel consists of 22 men, as far as I could count. Four of them climb into the UFO craft. The device is started at 9:20 a.m. It is almost dark at this time of year. For a very short time, a noise like that of a small lawnmower engine can be heard. This stops again immediately. But now a quiet, singing noise can be heard. On top of the structure, a not very large propeller is extended and started with a gas turbine noise. The propeller then slowly pulls the UFO craft upwards. At a height of about 1,000 meters, the propeller noise stops. It is probably retracted again. Instead, small jets of flame suddenly appear around the edge of the UFO, as if from many small nozzles. Only very briefly. Then only the jet engines remain on the rear edge of the window. These suddenly emit a comet tail and the UFO craft shoots away quickly. After a few moments it can no longer be seen. 2. 1988 alleged observation of a British reconnaissance aircraft. The supposed extraterrestrial spaceship could be clearly identified. German national insignia were seen, just like on civilian aircraft. A very good photograph was taken. At an altitude of 7,500 meters we approached the UFO crafter within about 400 meters. But then it sprinted away at an unassailable speed. The size is not easy to estimate. But one can say that it was at least 15 meters in diameter and at most 25 meters. Weapons installations could not be identified. 3. An observation of the FU-2 device in Chad, Africa, 1989. Allegedly French information supply. Literal translation of the alleged report. The report about a terrifying object that had come from the sky was only about 45 minutes old when it was received by our location. The people, natives, were very afraid. When we approached the location, it was a shock for us too. I have never seen anything so alien-looking. My first thought was that aliens had really landed. There was a flying saucer, a UFO, exactly as you would imagine. At first glance, it had nothing human about it. None of us noticed the lettering and the small German badge, the flag, as is usual on all aircraft as a nationality badge. We initially stayed in cover behind the bushes about 150 meters away from the spaceship. The UFO seemed to have made an emergency landing. It was standing slightly crooked on its five extended metal legs. It was perhaps just under 20 meters in diameter. It had a tall, cylindrical structure with a smaller, round structure on top. The window was shaped like a very blunt cone. In the middle at the bottom there was a small, glazed structure that could probably be extended and retracted. At the top of the large structures were rectangular windows. The UFO was painted gray, roughly like the way the Americans paint their fighter planes these days. Then a man appeared right at the top of the roof of the structure. There must have been a hatch there. At first we were very frightened because we really thought an extraterrestrial being was coming out of there. But it was a completely normal person who looked like a European. Now we noticed the markings on the black, red and yellow flag badges and the letters. DFU-H2W. We realized that this must be a German experimental aircraft, one that was completely unknown to us, that they had perhaps developed together with the Americans, I thought, because of the gray paintwork. Nevertheless, we were still paralyzed by the strange UFO impression. The man, who had been looking with binoculars but had not spotted us, climbed back into the UFO and immediately heard a short, quiet, a rattling noise and then a humming sound. The UFO rose a tiny bit. It was no longer crooked. The metal legs were retracted, but one of them didn't go all the way in. The UFO hovered close to the ground, no more than maybe 2 meters. We wanted to go closer. But there was another noise that unsettled us. A kind of howling. And then something like slatted wings rotated. These rose from the low cone to the horizontal and circled the whole thing with a whoosh. There was a humming noise like that of a giant wasp. This caused the UFO to slowly rise vertically upwards. Now I saw that there were 2 jets or rocket engines below, although not very large ones. When the UFO had screwed itself up a few hundred meters with its slats, the engines below were ignited. The humming of the slatted rotor stopped and the UFO flew faster, but not very fast. But as it rose higher, it suddenly became very fast and could soon no longer be observed. 4. 1990 Observation of UFU-2 device in central Germany. Allegedly a British agent report. Literally translated. Despite the evening time, I could clearly see through night vision that the thing standing there was a UFO craft. It was metallic, still unpainted and certainly not quite finished. But it had 2 slim cannon barrels on top of the superstructure roof that protruded from a panel. The area was closely guarded. It was not possible to get close. The UFO craft was about 20 meters in diameter, probably a little less. It stood on thick, short telescopic landing legs that looked almost like elephant feet. Otherwise it was essentially the same as the observation report. Here is a code that probably means 3. I can understand very well that it makes you feel uneasy when you see something like that land somewhere. It really does look like a spaceship from another star. I was able to get a little closer when it was completely dark. I saw several people get into the UFO craft. I think there were 5 of them, and one of them could have been a woman. Because vehicles were driving back and forth, I had to retreat. The Germans shield their UFOs well. But they don't appear in uniforms. I didn't see anything anywhere that indicated a government company. After about an hour and a half, a deep humming sound was heard and I saw the UFO craft rise into the sky. Relatively slowly, when it had reached a certain height, which I cannot estimate, the humming sound stopped. I could see that 2 jet engines, or rockets, began to work under the UFO body. The device then moved away very quickly. Summary: the summary of the alleged secret dossier states more or less that there are 2 possibilities in this matter. First possibility. The UFO crafts are being built by Germans and Americans in secret agreement. From the beginning, the USA had been working with the Federal Republic of Germany behind the backs of Great Britain and France, which was particularly inappropriate towards the British, but could have been approved towards the French, who were only half members of NATO. It is also conceivable that the Germans initially only worked with Israel and then the USA was brought into the matter. There is, it is said, a certain logic in this version, since the UFO crafts would probably only gain practical value in combination with American space technology. In addition, there is a tendency in the USA to see Germany as the most important partner in Europe and to build it up in this way. Second possibility. The whole matter is taking place under the line of official statehood. According to this, private companies, German and certainly also American, are working alone to exploit a secret technology, bypassing their governments. This variant is supported, it is said, by the activity of the network Sachmit. This seems to be a well-known term in higher intelligence circles, which apparently refers to an organization that has developed within Western intelligence services and is said to pursue its own or industrial interests, with non-democratic ambitions behind it. The names of companies were also listed, although all of them have been made unrecognizable. The possibility that the UFO crafts could be figments of the imagination has been ruled out. However, it remains unclear to what extent this technology might be successful. All in all, this alleged dossier contains different opinions from different authors. If you want to overlook these inconsistencies for once or may be seen as inherent in the nature of the matter, the question still remains as to how such a secret and, if it were genuine, highly explosive dossier could leave the secret compartments and fall into the hands of unauthorized persons. But, as we all know, almost anything is possible. Source of the text and this image, STM Archive, link to the Tegetar Pleiadians explanations of what happened during early contacts with Eisenhower, plus this about on and what happened to Marie Orsic.